Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing very well.
Good.
And let's talk about money.
Money.
Money that we don't have, and the money that our government is spending, and they don't have it either. But they have a little trick. I think that trick is called, well, just print it.
Yeah.
You know, but isn't that counterfeit? Yeah, we think it's counterfeit. Does it lead to problems? Yes, we think it'll lead to problems. But won't some people do get some good things from all that printed money? What we want to talk about today is the military budget. You know, they call it DOD, Department of Defense. Well, we know it's not defense. It's military industrial complex. Welfareism is what it is. But Brown University has a group up there that periodically puts out reports on this type of spending and try and get to the bottom, because they don't depend on the politicians. You know, both sides will say, well, we don't have enough. We don't have enough. If you do this, we'll do this. We need more money. It's always a problem, more money. And believe it or not, they have found out that the military spending is much bigger than most people realize. And they went over the amount that has been spent in the last 17 years in this current war that we're in. And they've decided very close to $6 trillion.
Wow.
So the money is being spent, had to borrow all of it. And the whole thing is we haven't won anything since then there. We've lost so much, you know, in life and limb and liberties and all the things. Everything is a downside. And yet we fortunately, you know, have a sort of a remnant of an electoral system where the people are supposed to speak out. And they did this election. And I couldn't tell the difference between the two parties, because when it looked at an issue like this and they looked at the budget, they were both supporting the same thing. The Democrats didn't want a balanced budget. Republicans didn't want a balanced budget. Nobody wanted to cut anything, and certainly nobody would cut the military-industrial complex. So on and on, here we go. And this analysis about Brown University, they added some things in that's completely ignored, and they even admitted it doesn't include every single thing you could include, because the cost of war goes on and on for decades. You know, the cost to keeping the taking care of the veterans, and one thing they have difficult measuring exactly the interest on the debt that they have to borrow. They have to borrow this money, but important thing is, they spend too much. Nobody seems to be learning a lesson. And even with these fiscal conservative Democrats coming into the House, I don't think they're going to help us out very much.
Not too much at all, you know. And this was done by the Watson Institute, which is part of Brown University. And we've done a lot of shows on the reports. I think they do really fascinating work because they dig deeper like you're supposed to do. And people will say $5.9 trillion. Nobody says that. Where are they getting this from? Well, what they do is they don't use the appropriations to the Department of Defense numbers, which is certainly much smaller. They factor in the total cost of the war. As you point out, they even admit that they don't get the whole thing. But in addition to the budget that's appropriated for fighting the wars, you got to deal with the State Department and what they're doing on the war fighting, which is plenty. You got to deal with veterans care now and long-term veterans care. As you point out, the interest on the debt, you've got to factor that in. You got to factor in the Department of Homeland Security, all of their counterterrorism operations and all these things that they do. You know, adding up and adding up, 17 years, almost $6 trillion, an unimaginable number.
And they do mention the various countries we're still involved in. They did consider this all one war against terrorism ever since, and they dated it from 9/11, which is a reasonable time to start this. But they mention, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria and Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, and Ukraine. No, they didn't mention Somalia or Ukraine, but that was part of it. What about Libya?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so they may have that stored away someplace, but even with their thoroughness, it's just impossible to know every place that we're spending money, because we're in 150 countries, and how can you call this anything other than militarism? When we send special forces and the CIA, is as much as a military operation as sending army people over. So it's massive. It's hard to measure. I think ultimately the only thing that will bring common sense to us is when people quit accepting the dollar, because we just print this money, and that will, you know, bring it to a halt. But right now, I think there's zero expectations that all of a sudden we're going to have enough people in Congress to do the same. I was asked a question the other day, could we reverse this if we wanted to? My answer is yes, but nobody wants to. You know, they're not going to do it because there's a little bit of pain with cutting back and living within your own means. So we're destined to continue this. The election tells us that, and we have to sort of, you know, buckle up and be prepared, because there will be a payday. You just can't do this. We can't run this. And not only will it be a cost in dollars, it's going to be the backfiring that they do this under the pretense, oh, we're going to be better defended than ever. And the whole thing is we will be defended less so with this type of operation.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the other countries that aren't necessarily counted. You remember a little while ago when we had a few troops killed in Niger, and every Congress said, hey, we didn't know we had troops in Niger, though nobody in Congress knew. And then we looked deeper, and I think we did a show on it where we didn't realize we had troops in almost literally every single African country. So that's a bunch of war there, too. And the thing is, as the Watson Institute report points out, the U.S. has no plan to end the 9/11 wars, which I think is a good term for them, you know, collectively. No plan to end these wars. The DOD anticipates military action in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, and Syria through at least 2023. So lots of dollars are going to keep flowing to all those companies in the Beltway.
You know, when you were mentioning the countries, we didn't know we had so many troops in just about all the countries of Africa. But if you look and see what the Chinese are doing, they have a lot of dollars and a lot of cash because we spend them over there, and so they have that in bank. They do accommodate us by buying up our debt, but they also, those rascals, they'll go and invest it. They're invested in a lot of these countries. So here it's almost like the reverse of what America used to be about. If they had extra cash, they went and invested in productive activities in other these countries. But China is more likely to have more investment. So we're over there spending money on the military, which is a drain, and they're over there investing money in various enterprises.
And those two do tend to clash as well, and that may actually lead to this big war that we might talk about later. You know, when they're over there investing, it certainly happened in Sudan when we were determined to split that country in half. The Chinese were investing in oil there. But there's another thing in the Watson Institute report that I found quite interesting and maybe worth pondering a little bit. They quote Senator McCain, who said a year ago, the late Senator John McCain, after 16 years, should the taxpayers of America be satisfied that we are in a stalemate? I don't think so. Good point. But I would go further and say it's even worse than that. We're not in a stalemate. We lose every year. The Taliban are in better shape than they've ever been. Cave dwellers, after 17 years of the greatest military in history, they're winning. What about elsewhere? What about in Iraq and Syria? Talk about not just militarily, but what about in terms of influence? Iran is the big victor. So it's not a stalemate. It's a lot worse than that.
See, we don't want to lose face, and they've used that. Johnson was that way in the 60s. He says, I cannot be the first American president to lose a war. So he had to send in more troops to win the war. All he did was kill more people, and more Americans died for it. That came up in the debates when I was a candidate. And they said that, you can't, people have died over there, and we can't let them have died in vain. So you want more people
to die?
You want more people to die in vain to prove that you didn't want those other ones to die in vain. But they just still don't understand, and we talked about this the other day, and that is, who has the military edge under these conditions? It's the people who are defending their homeland. And they don't really know our history, because it happens to be that one of the most unusual victories were the colonists, our American colonists, winning over the British Empire. You know, it was huge, and yet they were fighting for they were fighting truly for liberty. They understood it, and they were fighting for their homeland and their way of life, and they came out victorious. But I think it's the people that do that. When you look at Afghanistan, why are we losing? I think the Taliban, which now, with the propaganda, every one of them is planning on coming here and bombing us.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I understand they have about three-fourths of the country right now,
yeah.
Control of the three-fourths of the country. So you're absolutely right. We have lost it, but we can't admit it. Even with all these victories, we've lost everything since World War II. I mean, Korea, we're still fighting that war, and we're still involved, and there's Vietnam and on and on. I don't think Hillary won in Libya.
Yeah.
You know, think of the tragedy there. So it goes on. But it's this bullheadedness of the inability to admit they're on the wrong track. You know, they take this poll all the time, right track or wrong track,
yeah.
You know, and they're just measuring it very generalized on how an individual or a party is doing. But they don't very often say, is our foreign policy on the right track or the wrong track? And that would be an interesting question, but I've never heard anybody ask that question, because maybe they would be forced to think about it. Well, you know, they'll think for 15 seconds, you know, it's not doing well. They're on the wrong track.
I would love to see a survey question just with the title of our show. Here's what we spend on the war on terror. Do you think we got a good deal for the money?
Yeah.
You know, I would say that it's almost an existential question, because I think that we're not winning the wars because the people fighting them, the people planning them, have no idea what winning looks like. You know, the neocons, I think, in their mind have an idea, which is that we completely subjugate a population. We put in a puppet government, and they do exactly what we say on the nose every time we say it and every time we demand it. Well, that's such an unrealistic expectation of people. There's no country in the world that would do that. So we're losing because we have no idea what winning looks like.
And maybe there's more to that than meets the eye, because maybe they define winning completely differently. You know, if they define it to get more DOD money,
yeah,
and enhance their special interests, and to be the warriors and the centurions going around and to some degree maintaining our empire, they would say, well, the old-fashioned thing of a military victory, we don't have to do that, but we win because the American people know what patriotism is about. And there's a big talk about how nationalistic and patriotic we are. Well, it looks like the so-called patriots that say, well, you vote for everything and you go everywhere. And they may think they're winning. What if they actually do believe some of the assumptions that we've alluded to? And that is, some of it is deliberate to cause chaos, because they're one world globalists and would like to see the breakdown of the current system. That's a possibility too. So yes, in conventional wisdom, which the American people should be looking to, is we don't win even in their start, and they're the ones who roll over and say, well, we got to be there. I mean, we have to keep winning. We can't walk away with a tail between our legs. So on and on, we continue the same old programs.
I'm glad you brought up the word patriotic, because I think it's worth pondering. You know, also in the report was a little quote. In 2011, Dr. Ryan Edwards calculated that more than $7.9 trillion in cumulative interest through 2056 on the war appropriations. So how patriotic is it for these people to saddle the generation, children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, to saddle them with $7.9 trillion, born in literally in bondage, bringing the country to its knees, destroying America for the next generation? How patriotic is that, really?
And it all comes about because this country has promoted and the people accept the whole idea that the only legitimate counterfeiter is the U.S. government through the Federal Reserve, and they do it, and that is the policy. And if you criticize that, you're unpatriotic. But I do want to talk a little bit before we close about, the other article out was that in spite of all this money, we're not prepared very well. if we have a war, or when we have a real war, we can't fight a war. And the article talked about we can't even fight against Russia or win against Russia or China. If we can't win against Afghanistan, we probably can't win against Russia or China. And I got to thinking, well, maybe it will be not Russia or China. Maybe we can't win a war, definitely couldn't win a war against Russia and China, especially since we're around the world and we're going broke, you know. So I think it would be very difficult. But I'm not, I think that's always a possibility because we have aggravated a lot of people. But I think the warring factions are there. I think there can be currency wars and trade wars and cyber wars, and that might be what will come in the new age that we have. And then very, very high-tech weapons, which won't be tanks. And we've sort of laughed and made a little fun. Well, those Russians, they only have one submarine, and it's not very modern. Well, maybe they don't need submarine. I'm talking carrier. Aircraft carriers. Yeah. Maybe they don't need aircraft carriers. But we keep building them and put somebody who's been dedicated to the military industrial, put his name on it, you know, and that's it. Maybe that money is being spent in the wrong way. Of course, our policy's in the wrong way. So maybe if we had, I shouldn't even say maybe, if we were truly interested in defense, we wouldn't be building some of these weapons, and maybe China and Russia are spending their money more wisely.
Yeah, maybe. And this, what you're referring to is something we both saw on antiwar.com. The Congress commissioned a report from the National Defense Strategy Commission on Pentagon readiness about how ready we were to fight wars in China and Russia. And they concluded U.S. military superiority has eroded to a dangerous degree and is facing a crisis. This despite the fact that we spend more than the next seven countries all combined. We still, our superiority is terrible. So you got to wonder, are the planners stupid? Is the stuff we're buying just total junk? How is it that we spend more than anyone, yet are our soldiers bad? Nobody would suggest that. So what is the missing thing here? And this is where I would suggest I'm going to call this war on terror. It's a ripoff. We've been ripped off. We spent $6 trillion on a war on terror for 17 years and gotten nothing for it. We're not safer. On the contrary, in fact, we're stimulating other countries to spend more on defense in response to our aggressive foreign policy. That is a classic self-licking ice cream cone where you continue to do something to create something and around and around you go. So after 17 years of this ripoff, now the new National Security Council, National Security Strategy comes out and says, no, it's not the war on terror. It's Russia and China that are a big threat. And nobody bats an eye. Let's spend more money on that. We're all getting ripped off. A small group of elite are getting rich. And I hope, Dr. Paul, that Americans start waking up to this.
Well, they'll have to, one way or the other. It just depends on what the conditions are like when they all wake up and what we can do then. But we talk a lot about the economic cost of this, and that's what we talked about today, the $6 trillion fighting wars that we're not winning. But the biggest cost, I think, is in the loss of liberty. And that is should be our number one concern because it doesn't provide liberty. I was thinking about this a lot after 9/11. They were at that time, these are rough figures, but we were probably spending $40 billion a year on intelligence gathering. And then the stories came out. Well, there was a lot of intelligence and a lot of we knew what was going on. They didn't share it, and they messed up terribly. So what was the answer? We had to, you know, spend more money. So they double it. It gets up to $70 or $80 billion. And the whole purpose is to spy on the enemy and know what they're doing and protect ourselves. And guess what? They use this money, and they're using it basically to spy on the American people and create more secrecy with our government and more collusion in these foreign affairs. So I think the biggest cost has been in the cost of liberty. I've argued the case that, you know, if we lost everything financially, which isn't going to happen, it's possible that with a horrendous financial crash, a lot of people get a lot poorer. But the only thing we need to get rich again, it will be our liberty. Because if that is the case, if we can work hard and keep what we earn, protect our liberties, stay out of these wars, have a sound currency, believe me, this country could be back on its feet in a year. But nobody has enough confidence or understanding what the process would be to change our pattern, change our habits, and change this idea that we have to regulate people, regulate the economy, regulate the world, and have a monetary system like we have today. We just need more people to understand that liberty is really the road to peace and prosperity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.